Good morning. First, I'd like to thank the committee for inviting me to give this talk at such a prestigious place. Today, we'll be talking a bit about an anti-diabetic drug that's been used for almost 60 years now. Talking about a few new mechanisms of the action of this drug, particularly on host physiology and aging through gut microbial metabolism. But I think the best way to start this talk is actually by talking about the model that you guys will be hearing throughout this talk, which is this little nematode. Can you actually see the pointer? I cannot see anything. There he is. Yeah. So this little nematode, and the reason why we use this nematode, C. elegans, is basically summarized in the sentence where he says, "You have made your way from worm to man, but much within you is still worm." So this sentence from Friedrich Nietzsche pretty much summarizes why we use C. elegans. As a biogerontologist, I've been trying to answer this question: can we actually treat aging? Can we find ways to reverse this process that we're all going through and that affects us all? And here, this question actually has been asked already for almost 500 years. You can actually see people jumping into this swimming pool, this fountain of youth, jumping when they're old and coming on the other side actually young. But the real question we're actually trying to address is not trying to stop this process or even rejuvenate. We're actually just trying to have a healthier aging. And the reason why we're doing this is because aging is indeed a risk factor for most of the diseases that affect pretty much every single organ of the human body. If you look at the statistics about populations and the evolution of the population throughout the last century, you can actually see that almost a quarter of the population is now over, or will be by, in prediction in 2051, will be over 65 years old. And this has a very important impact both at the society level and also at the economical level, given the burden of all these diseases on the health systems. So as biogerontologists, we believe that if we can find the mechanisms of aging and potentially treat aging, we will be able to solve many of the diseases that are very strongly associated with aging, whether it's cancer, whether it's type 2 diabetes, and so on. So are we actually going to achieve this? One way to do this, we believe that if we can find dietary restriction mimetics, we have a good chance of actually solving this problem. Dietary restriction has been tested in many organisms, from Saccharomyces cerevisiae to primates, with very good effects both on health span and on lifespan. One of these diseases of aging is diabetes. We've seen that in the last 26 years, there's a tenfold increase with people with type 2 diabetes. And as the Western diet will reach new places, these numbers are very likely to go up. The main causes for diabetes are, as I mentioned previously, aging, obesity, physical inactivity that can, to some extent, be improved through diet and exercise. As an alternative, there's other drugs in the market which can be used. Metformin is one of them. So at this point, we start thinking, well, if metformin is doing what its diet or exercise are doing in the host physiology by decreasing blood glucose and improving insulin sensitivity, then we have a chance of finding potentially a drug that could also be an anti-aging drug. And that's what biogerontologists have been doing. They've been testing these dietary restriction mimetics with actually some success. So in C. elegans, metformin extends lifespan, and this requires AMPK, an important regulator of host physiology. Seems to be doing similar things in flies, and actually metformin also increases lifespan in other mammals, and not just mice, but also in rats. And in this longitudinal study, it was shown that indeed metformin could reduce the risk of death by any cause in type 2 diabetic patients. So for those who are not used to looking at lifespan curves, we usually look at when 50% of the population here in the y-axis reaches, and you can see here the control, the black line, and you can see that about day 20, half of the population is dead by that time. And when you start administering the drug, you can see that at 50 millimolar, you see a very strong increase in this mean lifespan. And actually, if you increase the concentration, then you start seeing this bell-shaped curve of a drug treatment. Fenformin, another anti-diabetic drug that had to be removed from the market due to severe lactic acidosis that was causing death, also seems to extend lifespan in a dose-dependent manner. Something that we're very careful when thinking about anti-aging strategies is that we don't want to be administering these drugs very early in time. So we actually tested whether metformin could be administered later stages in life in this little worm to even increase lifespan. You can actually see it at 25 millimolar. You can still see an increase in lifespan, which is smaller. But actually, if you start administering 50 millimolar or 100 millimolar, you start seeing a toxic effect. And this actually shows us that there's a timing and a concentration effect of administration of metformin for lifespan. And this has also been shown for mammals. A study from the Driscoll lab showed that indeed, if the mutant, and this is one of the advantages of C. elegans, you can have genetic models that can induce specific phenotypes. So these worms are constitutively under dietary restriction. And when you give them metformin, you won't see this extension of lifespan. And this strongly suggests that metformin might be acting as a dietary restriction mimetic. So a little bit more information about metformin. It's the most widely prescribed drug to treat type 2 diabetes. It's one of the most widely prescribed drugs in general. It's now been tested for other metabolic syndromes or other metabolic diseases, such as metabolic syndrome, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. It's now been thoroughly tested for cancer, and potentially it could be an anti-aging drug. Something that has been overlooked, but now people are paying a little bit more attention, it's actually its effects on the gastrointestinal tract. It can cause important or severe gastrointestinal upset, in some cases leading to the discontinuation of the treatment. The concentrations of the drug in the gut are actually 300 times higher than the concentration in the plasma. Actually, for an 850 milligram dose, which is a single dose for a diabetic patient, and usually diabetic patients have three doses, you can reach up to 20 millimolar inside the gut. It causes folate and vitamin B12 deficiency, although we don't really know the causes for this and what is the consequence to the host. And there's a study from the 90s who actually shows... Can you see the pointer? Yeah. And if they show that the administration, if it is done intravenously, has no effect on glucose homeostasis, suggesting that indeed there might be an effect of the microbiota metformin action. So how do we go to understand these very complex interactions? We can do human studies, but as you all know, and this pointed out throughout the conference, that these are very hard to distinguish between cause consequence, just pure correlation. An alternative method is to use MOFSC, non-abiotic germ-free models. These, as you all know, also are very expensive. They're difficult to maintain. This is even harder if you're doing longevity studies, and their physiology is less well understood. So, if we want to address this, and since we already have the problem of this, the fact that we do not understand the physiology so well, we can use other models. And yesterday we saw a great talk from François Lullier, where he showed that the fly is an excellent model for this to address these kind of questions. But here today I'll be talking about C. elegans, which is, we believe, another interesting model for these kind of interactions. So C. elegans is a cost-effective model for studying evolutionarily conserved processes, such as metabolism, aging, and the innate immune system. We can simplify this very important complexity that we observe in mammals by just studying how a single bacterial species can interact with a host, and there are vast mutant libraries, so the powerful genetics, both of C. elegans and the bacterial strain, the E. coli. So why... I think in your heads you're all asking, well, why should we be using C. elegans in the first place? And if you start looking at this scorecard, very quickly you're going to say, well, it doesn't seem to be a good model for studying anything. But if you look, actually, the genome size is almost 30 times higher for humans compared to C. elegans. But if you look at the encoded proteins by these organisms, you can actually see that humans only express 50% proteins compared to C. elegans. And actually 70% of the proteins of C. elegans have a clear human ortholog. So we can study many of the processes that occur in humans by using this very simple model. An advantage is the little worm, especially if you're studying aging, this little worm will live for 3 weeks, while humans, we all know, hopefully we all live until 100 years. So in addition to that, not only there's that advantage, but also the C. elegans basically it's just a moving gut. It's very well conserved. It's composed by 20 cells that surround a lumen that contain bacteria. And here, another advantage of C. elegans, it's a transparent organism that you can actually study processes in real time. And here you can see bacteria expressing a red bacteria. And the structure of the cells are very similar, are strikingly similar to a human cell. But more important than that is actually that the functions of the microbiota in C. elegans are very well conserved compared to humans. So not only the typical conservation of one eukaryotic cell to nine prokaryotic cells, this is also observed in an adult of C. elegans, but more important is the function that these microbes exert on the host, such as protecting against other pathogens, maturing the immune system, and so on and so on. And the lab is particularly interesting in how the bacteria can metabolize xenobiotics and the effects of these in the host by using the little worm. So there's different mechanisms by which we believe the microbiota might be involved in how metformin influence different physiological parameters. One of them is structure by changing the different proportions of the bacterial species in the gut, or by actually acting directly on specific metabolic pathways of the bacteria to promote a specific effect. And first I'll be talking about some of the studies, and then I'll move on into a recent study that we published. So there's this great paper from the Backheat lab where he actually showed that metformin could strongly alter the bacterial species in the gut of diabetic patients for long treatments. And another study published in Gut by a Korean lab actually showed that metformin was doing these changes in the different proportions of the bacteria, leading to an increase in this particular species, Acromantia, which they then claimed to be responsible for the glucose homeostasis caused by that metformin has in diet-induced obese mice. So in this graph, you can actually see that they compared and tried to find or bacterial species that were underrepresented on a high-fat diet compared to a normal diet, and that this was restored by metformin treatment. So you can see that, indeed, Acromantia is strongly underrepresented in the high-fat diet compared to the normal diet or the metformin-treated a normal chow. But when you actually have high-fat diet plus metformin, Acromantia seems to be restored. So they start following a little bit into this, and you can see that, indeed, either metformin treatment or Acromantia supplementation by Gavage in these mice can increase the number of mucin-producing cells. And here in these black spots, the goblet cells, you can see there's an increase in these compared to a high-fat diet and the normal. So here is the quantification. You can actually see the high-fat diet decreases this number of goblet cells, and it's restored by both either metformin or Acromantia Gavage. They actually went to see if this was responsible for the glucose tolerance effects. And indeed, metformin improves glucose tolerance, and similarly, Acromantia seems to be doing the same. But until here, everything was just simply correlational. But they went a little bit further and tried to understand whether these changes in the microbiota were responsible for the effects of metformin. So they treated these mice with a cocktail of antibiotics in a high-fat diet, and they could see that this improved the phenotype. But when you added it in combination with metformin, there was not an additive effect, suggesting that indeed these changes in the microbiome were responsible for the glucose homeostasis induced by metformin. The big question is, if high-fat diet or high-sugar diet are strongly altering or creating a dysbiotic state that could lead to insulin resistance and dyslipidemia or disrupted gyrification, how is actually metformin bringing back these changes? What is actually going on to bring this insulin sensitivity and potentially some anti-aging effects? So we did some work on this, which started almost 4 years ago now, we published a paper where we tried to understand whether metformin is acting directly on the E. coli, directly on the host, which is most of the drug that we actually take, or actually a combination of both. So taking a little bit of what Peter showed yesterday, when you have a drug, this drug can be either biotransformed, leading to the inactivation of the compound, a further activation of the compound that will have an effect on the host, or even producing something that becomes toxic to the host. An alternative is the drugs will act as antibiotics. This can have a strong arresting effect on bacterial growth, and this will act also on host physiology. Or something even more complex, where you have a drug indirectly acting on the bacteria, but as most drugs will have a direct effect on the host, and there's a very different symbiotic change in their interaction. So we published last year that indeed metformin could slow down or retard aging in C. elegans by altering methionine and folate metabolism of the bacteria. And so the first experiment we actually performed was actually trying to understand if the bacteria had any role on the metformin effect. So this is the classical situation where you can see worms growing in the control bacteria or worms growing in the bacteria growing the presence of the drug. And here you can see the 30% extension that you usually get. When you remove bacteria from the equation, you can now see the metformin, that these actually strongly increases lifespan, so the absence of microbes seems to be, at least if you live in a bubble, seems to be something positive, and this was actually shown also in mammals. But now when you have metformin in the absence of bacteria, instead of further extending lifespan, you actually see a shortening of lifespan, suggesting that indeed in the absence of bacteria, metformin was toxic. So we followed this up since it was such a striking result, and we tested this in two different ways. One of the ways that we did it was actually growing bacteria in the presence of metformin or in the absence of metformin, transferring that bacteria to plates that didn't have the drug, and then tested whether this could extend lifespan. And you can clearly see here that this conditioned bacteria still recapitulated the effects of metformin, and overall suggesting that indeed the presence of bacteria, the changes in the bacteria, were responsible for the lifespan effect. So at this point, we start wondering, well, what kind of changes are occurring in the microbe? So this is just a simple bacterial growth curve, and you can see that metformin strongly impairs bacterial growth in a dose-dependent manner at the concentrations we saw having an effect on lifespan. We could actually correlate the effects of bacterial growth and lifespan in a very strong correlation between the two. So the more the bacteria is impaired, the more likely they are to promote a positive effect on lifespan. And then we start trying to understand what is actually happening to this bacterium. And we for that, we used a bacteria that contains a plasmid that confers resistance to a wide variety of antibiotics and other treatments. And we can actually see that even in this bacteria, if instead of having the control bacteria, metformin was still extending lifespan in a similar manner, suggesting that potentially a new mechanism of action was in place. So at this point, we're a bit lost. We're trying to find what was actually going on. We tested many things that we knew were affecting lifespan of C. elegans through the interaction with the bacteria. This includes E. coli proliferation, altering lipopolysaccharides and reducing respiration. And if you know a little bit about metformin, the literature says that it acts as a complex one inhibitor, but we're able to disprove all this. But there was a paper published just a year before we published our paper suggesting that indeed if you impair folate metabolism in bacteria, you can extend lifespan, and if you supplement back these metabolites, you can rescue that effect. And since we knew from the literature that metformin could impair folate and vitamin B12, we start wondering whether metformin was having an anti-folate effect. So in collaboration with Nick Green at the Institute of Child Health, we started looking at folate metabolism. I'm not going to go over this, otherwise you'll all be sleeping, and I know it's quite early. But we, after mathematical analysis, you can actually see that is a striking change with the metformin treatment. And after doing an analysis to this, we basically came to the conclusion that metformin was creating what we call in the field as a methyl trap. So 5-methyl tetrahydrofolate, an important folate donor, cannot be converted to tetrahydrofolate and methionine. So at this point, we wanted to know whether this change, this particular impairment of folate metabolism, was responsible for our lifespan effect. So for that, we use a different approach where we use an antibiotic, trimethoprim, that specifically inhibits dihydrofolate reductase, but only of the bacteria, not of the host. So it will only affect the bacteria. When you do give or administer this drug with different concentrations, you can see a dose-dependent effect on lifespan. But then we start wondering what actually happens if you combine it with 50 millimolar metformin. You increase the concentration of trimethoprim, but you maintain the concentration of metformin. And this is what actually happens. So at low doses of trimethoprim with 50 millimolar metformin, you can actually see a small additive synergistic effect. But then as you increase the concentrations of trimethoprim and you maintain that metformin, we start seeing a decrease in this lifespan effect. And we start wondering why this was actually happening. So you can see this PCA analysis, and you can see that both metformin and the trimethoprim method actually strongly change this metabolic print, but actually when you combine trimethoprim and metformin at the highest concentration of trimethoprim, they actually adopt the same metabolic pattern as trimethoprim itself. So this is actually telling us that if you inhibit the folate cycle very early on with very high concentrations of of trimethoprim, metformin completely loses its positive effect on lifespan, strongly suggesting and potentially explaining what we were observing in the lifespan effect. So at this point, we thought we had fully figured out what metformin was doing, at least to the bacteria, so we'd start looking more a little bit into the host. So the first thing we looked into was folate metabolism, whether folate metabolism was restricted or altered in the host, and we're surprised to see that this was not the case. However, we do know that folate metabolism and methionine metabolism are strongly connected, and we actually saw that acetonasal methionine here, that is derived from methionine, was strongly deregulated in the metformin-treated worms. So, and we also know that indeed methionine is an important amino acid to mediate the effects of dietary restriction in many animals here in Drosophila, but it's also been shown in mammals. So again, having the advantage of having a wide variety of mutants, we tested whether this methionine restriction could potentially explain the lifespan effect. So here, when you use a methionine synthase mutant that cannot produce methionine from 5-methyltetriiodofurfural or homocysteine, it can actually have to take it all from the bacteria. And since the bacteria can provide them as much methionine as they need, it's not surprising that the methionine synthase mutant actually has a perfectly normal lifespan. But what happens now when you combine it with metformin? Since metformin is not providing any methionine because it's blocking it, and because the host cannot produce its own methionine, we actually see an additive synergistic effect, showing a strong interaction between these two things and suggesting that indeed methionine restriction could be the potential mechanism. So we show that metformin will have either a positive or a negative effect on lifespan, whether it can inhibit folate or methionine in bacteria. If you actually provide a bacterial strain that is resistant or less sensitive to the effect of metformin, you will not see this positive effect, or if in the absence of bacteria, you won't see a positive effect on lifespan. I don't have time to go over more data that we published in the paper, but we also show actually that metformin has this very complex scenario that also has a direct effect on the host, but it does it by upregulating genes that are involved in detoxification and stress resistance. So some a little bit of unpublished data. So we're actually looking whether metformin could also not just improve lifespan, but also health span. So these are worms, and for those who are not used to look at worms, I think it's very obvious. If you compare the situation, we have a bacterial strain that is sensitive to the effects of metformin and treated with metformin, that these are very much more robust, they're bigger, and they actually maintain this robustness almost throughout life. If you give metformin, but there's a resistant strain, you actually see that this effect is much more minor compared to the control strain. So we actually start measuring the size of the worms, which is a good indication of health span. You can see that throughout aging, as we go through this process, we get to our peak of health span, and then we start decreasing. Same thing happens with worms, and you can see here, they peak at day 8, and they start decreasing. But this actually is actually delayed or actually even improved with metformin. The worms get much better, and they maintain that state for longer periods. We're actually able to show that this improvement by metformin is completely dependent on the bacteria, but not on genes that were shown to regulate the lifespan effect. So there's a difference between the genes that mediate one type of phenotype and the other type of phenotype. But actually, if the worms are growing this bacterial strain that is resistant to metformin, you do not see this improvement. They actually start decreasing quite fast. We start looking into the gut because there was some literature that was showing that the gut is improved in mammals. And similarly, in day 4 worms, you can see that there's a massive increase in the size of the gut, and this gut is much more improved, the function of the gut. And again, this is completely dependent on the effects of metformin on the bacteria. And finally, again, using the advantage of using this genetic model, we can actually test in a very direct way whether this improvement of gut function could be responsible for the lifespan effect. And you can actually see if the worms are defective in these gut functions, if you administer metformin, you do not see the effect of lifespan that we would see on the wild-type worm, strongly suggesting that this gut improvement by metformin treatment is important for the lifespan effect. So I'm not going to go over and I think this is going to stay for potentially for a new talk. We're now trying to understand what happens when you treat patients with metformin and you stop the treatment. What is the consequence of having had these changes or stable changes in the microbiome? And I think we're now at a point where we're collecting really exciting data, and hopefully you'll hear from it soon. So I just want to finish by thanking the people in my lab. This is just starting a lab. We've been working for almost 8 months now on our own. the previous labs that have been collaborating, particularly in this project, and Peter Offner and Nick that have also contributed specifically to this work. So I'd like to thank you for listening, and I'm looking forward to questions. Thank you.